20 years ago, from the TV screens in their living rooms, long before Law and Order, the country was held spellbound by a real courtroom drama, one that touched on issues of sex, abuse of power, gender, and race.
As a black American, as far as I'm concerned, it is a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks who in any way deign to think for themselves, to do for themselves, to have different ideas. And it is a message that unless you kowtow to an old order, this is what will happen to you. You will be lynched, destroyed, caricatured by a committee of the U.S. Senate rather than hung from a tree.
Strong words by then nominee Clarence Thomas. He was a judge for the U.S. Court of Appeals when he said that. He was nominated by the first President Bush in July of 1991. He went through the usual battery of questioning in the Senate throughout September. And his confirmation was at sometimes controversial, but it was still seemed likely until young professor named Anita Hill came forward with sexual harassment allegations against him. And remember, at the time, sexual harassment was not as commonly well known as it is now. In the end, those hearings changed American life and law, although they didn't change the confirmation of Clarence Thomas. Joining us now, Patricia Williams, a professor of law who watched the Hill-Thomas hearings from a post at Columbia Law School. She's also a columnist at The Nation magazine. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning.
And Emily May, the founder and executive director of Hollaback, an international movement to end street harassment. And Emily, you were 10 years old in 1991.
That's correct. 10 years old.
Do you remember them?
I do. I absolutely remember it. And, you know, there were a couple parts of it that I remember especially. One was that my mother wouldn't talk to me about it, and I assumed that it was because it had the word sex in it. And I was 10. And finally, when she opened up about it, I didn't really understand why what was happening wasn't compliments. And I said to her, I said, you know, if my stepfather said these things to you, that you would appreciate it. And she said, yes, but it's very, very different when it happens in the workplace and when it's non-consensual.
Remind us of the specifics that you talked about with your mother, though, the specific things.
I mean, my mother talked about how he would ask her out on dates and how he would talk about her clothes all the time. And, you know, and it was sort of it was definitely the kid gloves version of what actually happened.
He didn't go into the Coke can.
The Coke can, I think my mom missed that.
that's Emily May of the organization Hollaback, and also with us, Patricia Williams, professor at Columbia Law School. And you're watching this from a pretty interesting perspective, not just as a woman, not just as a woman of color, but also an expert on the legal system. And which is the most important ripple effect of these hearings?
Well, I think the ripple effect has been in the political sphere, actually, more than the legal sphere. We had sexual harassment laws at that time, but nobody was really taking them seriously until that confrontation, in which she not only made some very much more serious allegations than he'd asked her out, but they were quite pornographic. But in addition, it was the reception that she received from United States senators who called her who accused her of witchcraft, erotomania, I believe Orrin Hatch waved the Bible and talked about exorcism. One senator muttered that this was sexual harassment crap. And I think that from that moment on, people began to really excavate what the experience of women was, because the experience of many, many women around the country came to bear in the face of those televised hearings. People were outraged.
Well, okay, two women were serving in the Senate in 1991. There are 17 today, and in fact, the Senate Judiciary Committee at the time was all male. So, Emily, let me ask you, do you agree with Patricia? Do you think that if there had been more women in the Senate now, do you think she would have gotten a different reaction?
You know, it's really hard to speculate about what had happened in the past. I think for us, what's so compelling about Anita Hill is what she's inspired in the future. I certainly grew up in a world where I knew that if workplace harassment happened to me, that it wasn't okay. But now we're growing up in a world, young women are growing up in a world where they're street harassed and it's just seen as something that's acceptable. And that's what we're trying to change at Hollaback.
That's Emily May, and she is, of course, with the group Hollaback. Patricia, let me go back to you and kind of discuss a little bit of the... I'm interested that you think that the legal implications were less than the political implications. I mean, of course, we got the Civil Rights Act in 1991. It was written into law shortly after the Thomas hearings ended, and that made it actually easier for victims to get monetary damage. Do you think that was influenced by the Clarence Thomas hearings?
Absolutely, it was influenced by the Clarence Thomas hearings. And I didn't mean to say that there were no positive repercussions. I also think that there's simply There has been some cutback on the availability of class actions and on civil trials generally, which make it a bit difficult to have any kind of suit, whether it's sexual harassment or not, in the civil courts. So that's more what I meant. I think that the discourse changed, however. So when Clarence Thomas tried to say that what occurred between them had to do with the bedroom, people began to say, no, 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 this is not the bedroom. This was not private. It was in the workplace. And more than that, it was a conflict of interest because he was head of the EEOC, which is in charge of enforcement of harassment laws. That was the issue in this case. But the Senate Judiciary Committee greeted it as though it were simply a matter of two consenting adults, going out on dates.
Let me ask you here, Emily, what you think came out of this in terms of gender, because Clarence Thomas was confirmed. In many ways, this came down to a he said, she said proposition. And in that particular case, they took his word over her word. What does that mean? Does that mean it was a loss for feminists and for Anita Hill specifically?
You know, there are parts of it that certainly were a loss, but I think what's so compelling to me is that 20 years later, we live in a world where workplace harassment isn't okay, and I think that's absolutely a win. And the work we're doing with Hollaback, we've been so inspired by the movement to address workplace harassment. And I think, you know, Anita Hill came forward and told her story, and that was perhaps the most political act that she could have done. But now people aren't just waiting for a single story to be told. Everyone has the ability to share their stories. Everyone has followers, and everyone, you know, is using these stories to really build the movement to end street harassment, inspired by, you know, our foremothers who use those stories to build the movement to end workplace harassment.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
I think that one of the most interesting, if indirect, responses of Anita Hill's allegations is that much more attention has been directed in the 20 years since to the behavior of men in political life. And I don't think that the kinds of exposures that we've seen from Larry Craig to Anthony Weiner would have occurred with quite so much holding to account.
So you don't think he would be confirmed today?
I don't think he would be confirmed today.
Do you think he was disqualified? The Anita Hill allegations disqualified him from being a justice of the Supreme Court?
I think that, again, if one were to have viewed it as it was, as an allegation about conflict of interest given his role as head of the EEOC, rather than whether or not it was, somebody called it, a Rabelaisian flirtation, yes, I think that it was at the heart of it. And I also think that it related to conflicts of interest that had been alleged before Anita Hill her testimony ever came forward, which is to say that he had conflicts of interest in ruling on cases in the lower courts that involved John Danforth's company.
Senator from Missouri.
Yes,
Senator,
yes, yeah. Ralston Purina, and that was his patron and his very, very good friend. And so I think that those questions of conflict of interest are now, ironically enough, 20 years later, coming up in some of the questions of judicial ethics and the Supreme Court involving both Clarence Thomas and his wife.
Well, it happened 20 years ago this week, and we're remembering the Clarence Thomas hearings. Patricia Williams is a professor at Columbia Law School and columnist at The Nation magazine. Emily May is founder and executive director of Hollaback, which is an international movement to end street harassment. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to get your remembrance of the Clarence Thomas hearings. If you have them, do you remember watching them on TV, listening to them on the radio? Do you think they have an impact still today? Give us your view at 8778-MY-TAKE.
Earlier this hour, we heard from Dr. Mohammad Mirandi and Siamak Kalhor, two Iranian-Americans reacting to that news yesterday of two men with ties to Iran being accused in a terrorism plot to kill a Saudi Arabian diplomat.
Iranians really don't believe the story at all whatsoever. First of all, there's absolutely no motive whatsoever for the Iranians to carry out such an attack. So it's completely meaningless.
A lot of our Iranians here have showed their condemnation, and they have really, they're shameful of what has happened.
Taking the pulse of Iranian Americans in the wake of those revelations, you're welcome to join the conversation as well. 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.